you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the movie calendar. My name is Lee.
My name is Terrence.
And we are in episode, not sure which one this is, but it's episode 2 of Director December.
I think 27, episode and, 2 of Director December.
Yeah, it is episode 27, and we are here to talk about, arguably, and many people do argue, one of the greatest pieces of cinema, if not the greatest piece of cinema that has ever been produced.
Yeah, you will get people arguing that, yes.
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Insane. Yeah. We have no idea as to how we're going to cover this film, but we're going to do our absolute best. We've got a few notes written down. This is going to be a very ad hoc episode. If you're here for the first time, welcome. It is so lovely to see you. We're going through a bunch of Tarantino films this month. Last month we did Reservoir Dogs. Now we're doing Pulp Fiction. We've got Kill Bill Volume 1 and Kill Bill Volume 2 to come.
I think the only reason this will be ad hoc, it's not so much ad hoc that, oh, we're just jumping in, we've just watched it, now we're talking about it. We've got so many notes and it goes all over the place, like the film itself. It just wreaks havoc on your logic.
Senses.
Your senses and sensibilities. It's just amazing. So iconic status, cult.
Yeah.
Cult references everywhere. My brain. Life because of this film.
My brain at the moment is just structured in the way that the film is, which is just all over the place, but yet seemingly somewhat still making sense.
Yeah, we'll work it out. And at the end, we'll look back at it and go, wait, what was that bit? How did he do that?
This is going to be a very hashtag what about when heavy episode. We've got an amazing email from a regular listener, Tobias. Thank you again for reaching out. We're so sorry we missed the Reservoir Dogs one. That email did come out the following day after we had recorded. So very sorry about that one. But yeah, we've got a big one for Pulp Fiction. It's going to make it in, which is very exciting. We've got time codes down in the description below. If you'd like to jump around, if you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app of choice, we have a YouTube version as well. The movie calendar. We are at the movie cal on all of the socials, Twitter, Instagram, best place to hang out with us, and an email as well. themoviecal@gmail.com.
And we have our website, themoviecalendar.com. Go there and you'll see all the films we've done, links to all the other episodes as well, or you could just subscribe on any of the channels.
Yeah.
Just our channel, not any other channel.
Yeah, subscribe on any channels you like, as long as you're subscribed to The Movie Calendar. Actually, that's a good point. We're getting close to a milestone subscription level.
We nearly have 10.
Give us a subscribe if you haven't done so already. It costs you nothing, and it's just easy to push that button.
Yeah, like and subscribe and hit ring the bell. That's what they all say.
Sure, I have no idea what any of that means. But yeah, enjoy. We're having fun and we hope you do too. We are going to be talking about the film as if you have seen it.
Yes.
So full spoilers ahead. If you haven't seen the film, absolutely check it out. This one is well worth your time. Quite a bit of language, a little bit of violence. At this point in time, you know whether you want to or don't want to see a Tarantino film. If you just want to hang out with us, you're more than welcome to do that as well.
Yeah, we want to keep this friendly for everyone. So Lee is amazing with, reminiscing with dialogue. So if he goes into a bit of acting out a scene, we're going to let him fly and I'll beep out the Fs.
Yeah.
And lots of other rude words being said in this, but we'll keep it all clean as we can. My kids aren't going to watch this because it's about a movie that they're not going to watch until they're of age.
Yeah.
Which I was very proud of when I became 18. When I turned 18, I was straight to my... I had a video rental store.
Was it a Blockbuster or a Video Easy?
It was an independent.
Oh, awesome.
It was an independent VHS, like little nan and pop corner store video shop that I had. And they knew me. And they knew me for years, and I was very proud one day. It was just after my 18th birthday, and I went up with Pulp Fiction and said, I'm going to hire this R-rated film. Thank you very much.
You must have been, like, you would have been on cloud nine.
Oh, it was so good. I couldn't wait to get home and watch it.
That's such a cool story.
I was like, what did you rent? I'm like, Pulp Fiction, it's meant to be pretty cool.
Had you seen it before?
No.
Oh, wow.
I was 18.
Yeah, you can see movies. Actually, no, you can't. If you're under 18, you cannot see movies that are rated 18.
No, you're not allowed, kiddies. But no, I wasn't into getting into cinemas and watching and doing all that. I'd go out every now and then, but it wouldn't... I don't know why. I should have gone in to watch this. Yeah. I could have handled it.
It's so good. This film is just incredible. I have a similar story, actually, with renting a film that we're talking about next week, which is Kill Bill. So make sure you subscribe to get that one.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll tell that story during that episode. But I have a All couple right. of stories to go with this film, include seeing it in the cinema. Obviously not when it came out. I was far too young. I had no idea as to what it would have been. But no, I have seen this film in the cinema a couple of times.
I'd love to go back and watch it.
If you get a chance to do it, it is amazing on the big screen. It's so cool.
Oh, that'd be awesome. All right, well, tell your story throughout the episode.
Yep.
How are we going to break this one down?
So this one's going to be broken down into, I think we'll talk about the dialogue, because you cannot talk about this film without talking about the dialogue. Very pithy. As we learned that word last week.
Episode. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we'll probably go into the style of it, the structure.
Mm.
If we have time, we'll get into the characters as well. And then, yeah, as I said, it's going to be a big hashtag what about when episode, because there's just so many moments that we want to talk about.
Yeah, and we won't talk about every single character, because this whole thing is so character driven and so many different storylines coming together, obviously, that we're not going to go into that. But we do want to hit a few points.
Yep.
I wish I was I'm not a film student. I wish I kind of was to go into... Am I boring you?
No, I was just...
I was flicking through his watch, everyone listening.
Not watching YouTube. Yeah, I was looking at my watch. I was just taking note of the time.
How dare you?
I know.
We had a few technical issues before we started, so we were going through fixing all these, so it's a little bit later. but I wish... Yeah, I wish I was a film student to understand a lot of the language used behind breaking up story writing like this, but as just a film enjoyer and observer of this medium, I was just blown away by it. But I really do wish that I could, you know, go back and see if Hitchcock did this kind of stuff, or if other big directors, you know,
there's a lot of homages in all of Tarantino's films, and it's you know, he does it out of love. People criticize him for just stealing other films, but he puts his own spin and flair on it, and there's a reason why his stuff is cult and some of those other things are more need to find.
And there are so many other directors that do blatantly
make
shot for shot, which again isn't stealing. In the way that it's done, it's to help their storyline, and they're doing it in extreme obvious homage to the original director. I mean, it's different if they're doing the whole film, okay, but you know, there's a line to cross, and I don't think Tarantino has crossed it, but then again, I did just say I don't know many directorial things.
So, I think a lot of people who say that, and you know, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth that's not in the room to defend themselves, but it's my podcast, so I will. And I think a lot of it's jealousy. Like, as you said, a lot of filmmakers do this kind of homage to other films, but I think Tarantino does it to such a high level that there's probably a little bit of jealousy there.
Yeah. Oh, look, if he gets called out for it, if you like, I'm sure he would say what inspired him.
He does, He's very open to be like, yes, all of the music in this film are from other movies. Or, this scene was a reflection on this random, you know, Italian film that I saw when I was a teenager, and I wanted to put it in my brain and then put it into this film. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Everyone does it. No writer or director just...
Makes it all up creates out
of
their own.
From nothing. Like, it all comes from their own experiences. Yeah. And Tarantino's entire life is an experience of cinema.
Yeah. I mean... Next episode, we do Kill Bill, obviously. Massively references.
Huge. Like
Japanese film.
Yep.
And a lot of character, not only styles, definite styles, but characters.
Actually takes characters from from other films and puts them in his stories, which is just awesome. Not to mention
his own films.
Yep.
And utilizing storylines and character lines, I guess, in each one.
Yeah, there's always a little like flow throughs between all of his films. Like, there's so many theories out there about how all of his films are connected in one, you know, in one universe, which is kind of true. Like, there's references to like Red Apple Cigarettes and like Big Kahuna Burger is in a couple of films, which it made its debut in this one.
In Pulp, yes. Okay. Yep. With Jules.
Yep.
Jules. Sometimes I get the characters. Jules and Vincent.
You need the Wolf's notepad when he was writing down who the people were that he was going to go meet.
That's so. But we're going to be talking about that later on.
Yeah, we're going to get into all of that plus a whole lot more. See, I would love to start with the dialogue because it is just incredible. I mean, Reservoir Dogs kind of set the stage for a whole new type of cinematic style where you've got these characters just talking about, you know, everyday life, things that they're passionate about. Like it has a flow and a natural pace to it. Like Tarantino was able to capture that. And here, he's just taken that whole idea and elevated it to a whole nother level.
Mm.
And he puts it in words of these characters that you instantly fall in love with. As characters, as horrible as a bunch of people are in this film, you can't help but just get completely immersed in them and their lives just by the way that they speak about these things. And it's so cool to see like gangsters, something that you know literally nothing about in your everyday life, just talk about mundane stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. He does that with everything, right? I guess that's his little flair that he puts on it, is everyone, no matter what their job is or no matter what they're about to do, they're still a person.
Yeah.
There are still things that go on in their head and they still need to be able to vent to someone else about their holiday to Amsterdam. I don't know if it was a holiday, but yeah.
Well, he was there for, what, would you say 3 or 4 years or something?
I think he says a little over 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool. It's very cool. And I think that is his... that is his niche.
Yeah.
You know, you look at other writers, like an amazing writer that comes to head is to my head is Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin is literally who I was going to mention.
Man, and he is at another level as well. But the two of them are so different in the way that the writing is extremely stylized with Tarantino. Yeah.
But so recognizable.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone is extremely intellectual in Tarantino's head. I kind of like that. And that's where I think the stylized nature of his dialogue writing comes out. Because with Sorkin, he's quite realistic. He's very real world. This could be the person waiting at the bus stop. With Tarantino, his dialogue is, stylized because it's kind of as colorful as he portrays violence in some films.
Yeah.
I feel. It's a little bit out of this worldly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not exactly reality. It's heightened to a point.
Yeah.
But yet still maintaining its realism.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it has got to do with the actors and the way he's written for those actors.
Yeah. You can tell that he has such a love and dedication to his performers.
Yeah.
To the point where there's interviews with Samuel L. Jackson, where he says that whenever he reads a Tarantino script, where he is a character, going to be a character in it, it's words that are so natural that he would have thought of them himself, and they're just words that he hasn't said yet.
Mm. Oh, that's so cool. He'd nearly be able to just riff the whole scene.
Yeah.
And it would nearly be exactly what Tarantino
wrote. It's amazing. And he does that. Like he'll adapt his writing to suit an actor. Like he'll have certain performers in mind for certain roles. Like he had for this film, I think he had Steve Buscemi in mind for the character of Jimmy, but he couldn't do it because of the scheduling conflict or something. And so he's like, cool, well, I'll do that role and you can have a little cameo in the film. And if you weren't aware, Terrence does know, but if you weren't aware at home, the waiter in Jackrabbit Slim's steakhouse or diner is Steve Buscemi as Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Buddy, I'll be your waiter.
Yeah, and he's a horrible waiter. I love that he doesn't make it flashy. He doesn't let you know that it's him. He just comes in, he's like, what can I get you?
Yeah.
Cool, yep, and what for you? All right, I'll go and get your stuff.
In very modest costume and makeup, he doesn't even look like Steve Buscemi. He looks like just a busboy.
Yeah, you know?
He looks quite young. He would have been happy with that role. Oh, I look 20.
I think another really cool thing about this dialogue is that it really helps to set the stakes of what's going to happen, and you don't even know that it's happening. And the example that I have is when Jules and Vincent are heading to their job in the morning in the opening of the film.
Mm-hmm.
After Pumpkin and Honey Bunny, and he's saying, Vincent is asking about the big man's wife, about Marcellus's wife. Mm-hmm. You know, how did they meet, and so on and so forth. Yeah. And Jules is like, why are you so interested? He's like, oh, you know, I've been asked to take her out. It's like, I'll take her out? No, man, you know, take her out and show her a good time. And you learn in this conversation that he tells a story about, oh, you know, she starred in a pilot. Oh, I don't watch television, yeah, but you know what it is. And he says, oh, you remember Antoine Rocky Horror, Tony Rocky Horror, Samoan guy? Word around the campfire is that Marcellus like messed him up good. And he just tells this story about these two people who we haven't met yet. You have no idea what's going on. But in the back of your mind, you're learning that over something so insignificant, seemingly insignificant, that happens, where Tony has given Mia a foot massage. He gets thrown out of a four-story window into a glass house and like paralyzing him and messing up his speech.
Yeah.
So you know that Marcellus Wallace is not to be messed with.
Yeah.
And that he is very protective of Mia. So that when Mia ODs later in the film, whilst that the stakes are high in and of itself, you, I don't even know whether you realize or not, but you know what the consequences are going to be if something happens to her. There's and it's all done through this mediocre style dialogue.
Brilliant foreshadowing, you know, where you, it's almost like a subliminal garnering of knowledge. You don't realize that they're going to play a massive part later in this film.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, Vincent also is scared when he, when this happens, when this OD happens, scared enough to run his car into someone's house and call for help because I don't care about your house. You are going to die. I am going to die. We're all going to die if we don't save her life.
Yeah.
That I like.
And you're on board with him because you know what's going to happen. Like you understand the consequences.
Yeah. Go, Vincent. Go, Vincent. Go.
Yeah.
Stab her in the heart.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Please, someone stab her in the heart.
Oh yeah.
She needs to live.
We'll get to that in the What About Wednesday, I reckon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like it's those things that are hidden in the dialogue, and I think you just said it so well then, where it's subliminal. Like you don't really know that it's happening. Like you're so used to being spoon fed things in film, where someone's like, "Oh, make sure you take care of the wife, otherwise, you know, Marcellus is, because he's so protective, he's gonna like he'll mess you up if something goes wrong. Like, well, make sure you stay on his good side."
Yeah.
Like it's disgusting and a lesser film. I'm sorry. If there is like you can hear cars and stuff going by. There are lots of cars
going on.
There's a lot of random noises that were happening in the house before we started recording. So apologies in advance.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it just rained, so you'll hear tires a lot clearer than otherwise.
There was a lot of rain and there was a storm and wind and cars. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's a
thing. You'll be right. We got over it. You can get over it.
Yeah. We're here to take care of you through it all.
Thanks for listening and watching.
But yeah, so that's the... Yeah, that's what I wanted to mention about the dialogue. Just
how
cool it is to see these characters talk about mundane things, seemingly mundane things, and the sneaking in all of the important stuff just in the the dialogue.
It's the, I'm sure there's a phrasing or there's some incredibly powerful saying that there's, what is it? There's details in the mundane, or there's excitement in the mundane. Something like, I don't know, but. The mundane conversations in this film are anything but.
Yeah.
And they have become these cult references. You know, I think by the genius decision to include them in the soundtrack, because I've got to say, I think the soundtrack of this film has helped elevate and take this film through time. Because people will listen to music a lot more regularly than they'll listen than they'll watch a film, just through sheer convenience of being able to put it in the car or whatever. But by putting these lines in the soundtrack has embedded this script into people's heads. I've memorized a few that I've forgotten, but since turning 18, that changed my life.
Yeah,
I learned a Bible verse.
Yeah, I know. everyone learned a Bible verse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's got to be the quote that we put at the opening, right?
Yeah.
Over the flicker. Like, you can't not do it. As I was thinking about, like, other quotes that we could put that are more niche or whatever, but it's the quote. You have to do it.
And it's like, so you're watching, so you would have heard it, and hopefully it was successful, but usually it's like 15 seconds over that, the 12, flicker 12 of the so projector. Seconds.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can fit some good amount in there.
Yeah, I think we would have. Yeah.
Like, you don't know what we're talking about. Let's stop talking about it because you already know what we're talking about.
Yeah, true. It's already happened for you.
But it's fun. Every episode we think, what are we
going to put what's the quote front? We're going to put over the front?
It's kind of cool. It's very cool. All right. Dialogue. Good.
Perfect. Should we talk about style?
Let's talk about style. I don't think there was any style in this film. Yeah, he just told a story and told it as it happened.
Yeah, yeah. It's chronologically, very, very, very linear. Like. Very linear storytelling.
Yeah, nothing special about it as well. Boy meets girl.
I think
boy wants girl.
Boy stabs girl in the heart with adrenaline. Girl ODs.
Wow. That would have to be, would have to have been one of the biggest talking points about this film. In fact, okay, I didn't watch the film when I was 18, but the reason I wanted to rent it so badly was because I wanted to see this thing that was told non-linear.
Yeah.
This was just groundbreaking. As a kid, I think I was in grade 12. Yeah, I was in grade 12, so I knew what this meant and thought, I can't wait to see this thing.
Yeah, this film was like a drug for people in cinemas. Like people who just liked films, and then you got the hardcore film fans. Like they all kind of came together and were like, there is a change happening. Like this is changing now. And all you have to do is look at any films that came out after this to see all of the attempts at trying to make the swagger of this film appear in another one. It just doesn't happen. You can't copy and paste this.
Unless you are copying and pasting it like in The Simpsons. Unless you're parodying it, you know, then I think, and that's perfect homage back to what we were talking about before.
Yep. If you're talking about Tarantino homaging other films for his films have become the go-to homage,
right?
There's literally so many, as most of us know, if you're new here, then you might not. I'm a huge fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's literally in the film that this is in reference to here, Captain America: The Winter Soldier. There's a scene where you see a gravestone, and it's literally got on it Ezekiel 25:17.
Oh,
in really? Reference, obviously, to Pulp Fiction.
Wow,
it's just incredible.
It's good when a film you love is parodied in so many other ways, not just parody. Yeah, you know, reference.
I remember watching. There was an interview with the great Australian actor Rod Taylor, who plays Winston Churchill in Inglourious Basterds. And he tells the story about how he was cast in the film, and how he got a phone call from Quentin Tarantino, like a direct call, not through an agent, not anything, a direct. And he's like, "Which one of my friends is playing a prank on me? This is ridiculous." And then he obviously got cast, and then was on the film. He was talking about how this film was literally like a drug. That's where I pulled the quote from Rod Taylor's mouth. He saw the film like 6 or 7 times in the theater. Like you couldn't stop going and seeing it. And I completely get that, because when this movie came across my presence for the first time, it was just, I have to show my friends. I've got to show my family. Just everyone. Yeah. I have to get their eyes and ears in front of this sensory experience, because it's nothing like you have ever seen before.
Yeah. And he was able to put some funny bits in there too.
It's hilarious. This movie is stunningly funny.
Mm. I don't know, like nearly gobsmacked as to where to go with this, but his storytelling, right?
The structure.
Not even the structure, going even more meta than that, you know, when he cuts to scenes of them driving. You know, it's a great style to use in the film to shoot everyone the same way in a car and have the camera just on the dash looking back, or just out on the bonnet looking back, and having the fake scenery like they used to do in old style films. Obviously, a hark back to the way filmmaking occurred, which is, again, dear to Tarantino's heart, but using different ways to show that in different scenes. When Butch comes out and jumps in the cab, the background is all black and white. It's an old film. And I'm thinking, why is that?
Projected
and that's my lack of movie history, of cinema knowledge, to know why that's black and white. But there's some reason that he's done that. And Vincent Vega, after he's taken his heroin and he's driving, and he's all in fairyland driving around, you know, and the lights are all misted. And, you know, it's I love those things. I love that he stays true to a technique.
Yeah.
And he'll take it right through. It creates a beautiful style.
A fun little aside to that, because it was brought up then, and I don't think it'll get brought up again, of having Vincent high on heroin and driving, the look on his face with his eyes squinty and puffy, and he looks euphoric is probably the word that you would say. When he partnered with a couple of heroin addicts to just learn, you know, what it was like, because he obviously wasn't going to do it for the film, and they gave the advice, it's like, what you need to do if you want to feel the effects of it is to get really drunk on tequila and then go and lay in a hot bath. And so he went home to his wife and was like, we've got research to do. and they both got wildly drunk on tequila and went and laid in a hot bath together.
Wow.
Yeah, which I read that piece of trivia, I think on IMDb, and I thought that was hilarious.
That is really weird.
Wow. Yeah, specifically tequila, apparently.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to dive any more into that topic, but that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
That's cool. Yeah, he did look more drunk than anything while he was driving.
Yeah.
Don't drink and drive, and don't drive under the influence of anything, please.
Don't do any substances at all, really. Drink but lots of water.
We champion water on this set. Yep. Cheers, clink, clink. All right.
That's for the great content
podcasters. Even heard the glass clink on my teeth, hopefully.
Don't break my glass.
Sorry.
They're very expensive.
What about my teeth?
I don't care. You don't need your teeth to speak.
All right, so time jumping.
Yeah, jumping all around. I still remember the first time I saw the film and when we get to the diner at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And they're talking very philosophically about, you know, miracles, God and miracles, and then giving up the life and wandering the earth. And then, like, midway through the conversation, it cuts to Tim Roth and Amanda Plummer in the diner being like, "Garçon, coffee." And you're like, oh, my God, this is from the opening of the film. It just blew my mind. Yep. It's so good. Or when, like, Butch goes back to his apartment during the Gold Watch segment and the machine gun is left on the thing and, like, Vincent gets killed. And then later we see him later in the film. And
yeah,
it's just...
Yeah.
And you're like, what is happening?
But you have these realizations in the moment.
It makes so much sense. And I love this non-linear style of storytelling when it works as a benefit to the narrative. Doing it for the sake of doing it, for just style's sake, is no good. And I could call out a few filmmakers that kind of do that. And sometimes they've gone a little bit far and beyond, but I won't. I really want to, but I won't.
I'm guessing you don't want to put those ones on the calendar.
There's a particular film that I saw recently that I was just like, this is stupid and makes no sense.
No, don't do that. We're about celebrating cinema.
Yeah, no, we are. We are here to celebrate cinema. Yeah.
Don't do it. He wants to do it. I'll beep it out. I'll pretend he said an F word.
I won't do it. I'm surprised. I'm very proud of us that we haven't sworn yet. But no, like, Tarantino uses it to his advantage in the storytelling and uses it to raise the stakes. And it's amazing. He does it in almost every single one of his films, excluding Django Unchained.
Yeah, okay.
Is a mostly linear story.
Yeah, yeah. Except for when you need to tell a little bit of backstory.
Yeah,
then,
like,
then you go back.
There's like a couple of flashbacks where he's on the Karukan plantation and he sees, I think Bruce Dern is the actor. Yeah, there's a little flashback, but otherwise the story is told structurally in a linear fashion.
You have an unbelievable memory. He has this memory that just is like, remember, like that bit. I've seen Django Unchained. I don't remember that bit. I kind of remember that bit, but I don't remember that bit.
Seeing that in the theater was so much fun.
Yeah, I think I saw it in
cinema. I saw it like three or four times. I took a different person to see it every single time. Oh. Not in a very efficient manner. I should have just bought them all at once. But I love seeing his movies by myself and then and sharing them with people. I have this thing where I really like seeing movies by myself in a movie theater. Yeah. Like, I'm completely comfortable with that. And then what I can do is I can gauge what the audience is kind of like for it.
Yeah.
And then take the friends that I think will really get something out of it. And then it kind of gives me an excuse to see a film more than once, and then also tell people to avoid a film if it's rubbish.
Yeah, I like seeing a film in a cinema for the audience reactions, and it adds so much more to it.
Yep.
And as a, you know, I'll make a couple of little videos and things, and I love. There's nothing better than watching an audience react to your work, especially when you make it. For love, you make it for them to enjoy, on whatever level. There's nothing more satisfying. So I have that little, like, behind the curtain as a person who makes this stuff to see and appreciate when an audience loves it, and I just think, oh, it'd be so good for the director to see this right now.
Where do you like to sit in a movie theater?
Wherever the kids choose. and since we haven't seen many films, my wife and I. Without kids, it's always a bit of a boom, we rush in. Okay, did we miss any of the...
Right, okay, I get it.
Where are we going to sit? Where are the free seats? There's some there. Should we sit here? And we sit... No, can't sit. Where are we going
to
go now?
I forget sometimes that I have the luxury of freedom.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to choose. But I kind of... Yeah. I take a page out of Quentin Tarantino's book. So he likes to see a film, if he hasn't seen it before, for the first time in a theater, like second row from the front, like really close to the front, so that he can just immerse himself in the screen. And I kind of do that too. He says, like, unless he's screening a film that he's either seen before, or it's one of his own films, where he'll sit in the back and he'll watch the audience.
Yeah, you can see a lot
experience
more,
yeah. The film.
No, I can't do that. I can't do it for the physical nature of it, for sitting like this the whole time and then having to look over that way and look over that way to see one person talking to the other person. I think there's too much.
There's a couple of really good theaters where we live. We're getting very off topic, but it is Tarantino tangential, yeah. Because we're talking about where he likes to sit in a film.
Tangential, so, good word.
There's a couple of
don't know if it's real or not,
cinemas in where we live that are really good, which I don't think you maybe have even been to either of them, but there's one that has giant beanbags up in the front row.
Yeah.
And I love doing that because then you're laying back and you can see the screen, which is great.
I'm all for that.
And there's another one where you don't have to sit at the front, but the way that the chairs are tiered are so angled down that the person who's sitting in front of you, like the back of the chair is like where your knees are. So you can't. So wherever you sit in the theater, it's just full screen.
So it's such a steep incline that everyone is quite close.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's super cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah, I love it.
That sounds like the way that they're trying to make flights on airlines more packed with people, get everyone standing.
Yeah. Yeah, just have everyone packed in. Well, there's no airlines going at the moment and there's no theaters going at the moment, but I actually bought a movie ticket recently. I'm so excited to go back to the theater.
Yeah.
Wow. So excited. Boxing Day.
Oh, okay. A lot of cinematic releases here in Australia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep. Usually Christmas Day for the US and we get them on Boxing Day.
Yeah. All right. Well, I had something I wanted to say and it was going to involve my wife as well. With watching films. I like going to see films without the kids. Yeah. I like watching films where it's just myself or myself and my wife because we both have the appreciation of a great film and everything that goes into it. We love watching the credits. We love sticking around and just watching the whole thing. Love it. And I've just gotten the kids to do that as well. My little one is a little bit tougher to sit down.
Sit down.
But we try and do it and we get them to have a look and say, look how many people it took to make this.
Yeah.
Check this out. And of course with Pixar films where they do the Pixar babies, the production babies. Yeah. That's so lovely that they do that. But they're always little things. And I think to appreciate a film in its entirety, you've got to be willing to realize everything that went into it. And to be able to sit there and watch it, I think shows a lot of respect for the filmmakers, for the whole talent, the whole team behind it, and all of their families as well. So I love doing that with my wife. I love sitting there, enjoying it for what we want to get out of it. And if there are other people, that's nice. Great.
Yeah, that's awesome. God, I miss the cinema so much. Pulp Fiction's a great film, though.
How about we talk about that one tonight?
Yeah, there's time codes in the thing below. We'll put a little thing, like a little tangential story time code, which is fine.
Sorry if you've watched
all this. We were talking about the structure of the film and how funny that we got a tangent after speaking about the like non-linear structure of this film. But no, I think the way that it's set up is just so awesome. Do you have a favorite chapter?
I can't really remember all the chapters.
There's the prologue in the diner.
Yeah.
There is then Vincent and Jules talking about Mia doing the hit.
Yep.
Then we go to the Butch prelogue with Marcellus, straight into the Gold Watch, which leads into the Bonnie situation, and then the finale in the diner.
I like to.
And if I missed one, I'm sorry.
I love the Bonnie situation. I think it's incredible that they're focusing on how Bonnie's going to react rather than the crime, the horrendous, heinous crime that they've committed, and if they get busted, what's going to happen to them all? They don't care about that. They're big crime people. They know how to deal with that. But an angry wife, lordy, I think it's
again, it's mundane
hilarious.
Stuff.
Yeah. It is hilarious, and
Harvey Keitel, the wolf. Oh my god!
Like just uber cool. You think you see cool in this film? That is the epitome of cool. And he's at some illegal gambling in someone's house. You know, when he takes the call?
I don't know what I don't think he was. I think he was...
I think he was. He's in a bedroom. Party. He's in a bedroom and they're calling out things for roulette. Last bets.
Oh,
you know,
I never noticed that. Or blackjack or something. Yeah.
It's a casino thing. I haven't visited many casinos.
Love his tuxedo that he's wearing at... So, what time in the morning is it? Like 8 a.m.?
He's at a high roller event in an illegal gambling setup.
Right.
Right? And he is rolling in dough.
Yeah.
Ready to go at the drop of a hat. And he's been up all night because they don't say, we'll meet at 5 a.m.
They've been going all night before.
So
this character just doesn't need sleep. He just lives off absorbing cool from everywhere and then just exudes it.
Oh, man. And so that's got to be one of my favorite scenes. And it has to be said, because I said this in the Reservoir Dogs episode that I was not a fan of Quentin Tarantino's acting ability.
Yeah, he's not a great actor. I think he's acting in this.
Yep. This is the best I've seen him act.
Yep.
Way better than Django Unchained, if you want an Aussie.
Oh, hire
an Aussie. Sorry, Quentin.
Gosh. Don't even start.
We all learn the hard way, don't
we,
mate?
It's the worst.
So, I think his portrayal of Jimmy was unbelievable. I loved it. I loved his anger that he brought. I loved his frustration. I love that he was him as well.
Yeah.
You know, in interviews that I've seen, I'm like, oh, he's just being himself. I loved it. It was so natural and so relevant and so great. Nicely written. It was him.
I know my coffee's good.
I loved him in this
role. When Barney goes to the supermarket, she buys shit.
And I forgot that he did that because I totally ripped on him for being a bad actor.
Yeah.
I love him in this. So I love that. And then just, I won't go into detail about it, but I also loved another one that I totally forgot about. Oh, yes. The Gimp, wherever that one happens.
The gold watch.
The gold watch bit.
Yeah.
Because it's about something good coming out of one of the most horrific things you could imagine yourself being involved with.
Yeah, they get put through it, those characters, to come out on the other side.
Yeah, I love that I could breathe at the end.
Yeah. So what, I rewatched the film this week. During that whole scene where they get captured by Zed, I knew it was coming, and in my head, before it came up, I was like, oh, because I remember how uncomfortable the scene is, and like, there's not humor that sort of comes from it. Like, while that scene's happening, there's some on either side of it, but I was like, is this necessary in this film? And is there a way you can do it without it? And whilst, yes, there probably is, because there is always different ways around stuff, it's just, you have to have these characters go through something like this together,
yep.
So that there's a forgiveness on the other side for the horrible things that Butch did. Like Marcellus is ready to just literally go to the ends of the earth to find and kill Butch after he betrayed him, because we all know how much Marcellus Wallace hates betrayal with the foot massage, which did or didn't happen. It's open to interpretation.
According to Mia, it didn't happen.
And then, yeah, so for them to go through that together, and then the conflict on Bruce Willis's face when he gets upstairs, he escapes from the chair, knocks out the Gimp, up the stairs he goes, and he's looking to head out the door and pauses, and the reflection on his face of, should I go back and save Marcellus? Like, he's got a soul, he's a real person. He has empathy, and yeah, obviously ends up going back. And one of the coolest scenes of him, trying to pick a weapon ever, which again, we'll get to in What About When.
We might just... Yes, yeah, we will get to it in What About When. But that was such a nice... Oh, so touching when he decided to turn around.
And stop the horrible things that were happening to Marcellus.
Oh,
yeah, what a beautiful moment.
Yeah, I really wanted them to become friends at the end.
Oh,
I was
gosh.
Like, I was at that level of like, you got to hug each other now. Nah, like,
you'd never want to see each other again,
and
would you? After
team
that?
Up, you know?
Yeah, because you'd always you'd have that memory.
Let's rule this town.
Yeah. When Butch gets back to Fabian in the hotel and he's like, since I left you, it has been the single weirdest day of my life. I'll tell you all about it, but we got to go.
And then leading on to one of the best lines. Whose chopper is this bit? Like, oh, man.
Whose motorcycle is this? It's not a motorcycle. It's a chopper, baby. Whose chopper is this? Zed. Who's Zed? Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
Yeah.
I'm going to get medieval on your ass.
That's so cool. I wonder if that line came from that film. I've heard that being thrown around a lot. I'm going to get medieval on your ass.
Oh, it probably came from this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There was another one that I didn't think of it. It was the where Jules and Vincent are talking in the hallway before they go and collect the suitcase again, where Jules just tells him about the throwing off the fourth story.
Yeah.
And Vincent says, well, you play with fire, you get burned.
Yeah.
I was thinking, ooh, there's one.
Matches, you get burned.
No, I had to look into it, and apparently it's used in Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, okay.
I think a girl plays with matches and she will get burned. It's something like that.
Sure.
If that's where it came from?
You don't think he overreacted? I mean, Tony probably didn't expect him to react the way that he did, but he had to expect a reaction.
I love how he's justifying the sincerity of a foot massage to him.
Yeah,
and totally so flips good. Him. Like, ooh, okay, yeah, shut up.
You ever given a foot massage? Hell yeah. I'm the foot massage master. I know that he swears. I'm trying my best not to swear.
Would you give
it? You giving a lot of them?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, I got my technique down and everything. I don't be tickling or nothing. Would you ever give a guy a foot massage? You. I had to do that one.
That was so good.
I'm kind of tired. I could use a foot massage right now.
And there's the humor, you know? Always in. I wasn't sure about these two, you know? Anyway, okay, we'll talk about characters. All right.
When you want to jump into characters? Yeah, okay, we'll talk characters. I forgot to mention at the start, we're going to talk briefcase as well. We didn't discuss this beforehand, but we're going to talk about what we think is in the briefcase.
All right, that's all right. We've discussed this already. I mean, we knew each other before we started the podcast.
Before we recorded this episode, so we know each other.
We've had this conversation already, so I know you think.
I don't remember what you think it is.
Well, ask me first, and I'm going to say what I think it is. All right. Winks to camera.
Characters. Would you like to talk about Jules and Vincent?
Sure, let's talk about them. I was just going to talk about how I wasn't sure of their relationship. When I say I wasn't sure, it was literally like I didn't know what it was.
Right.
If they were mates, if they were friends from beforehand, if they worked together before, if this was their first job that they'd been on.
Yeah, no,
it was hard to pinpoint.
I don't know. I think that they have been working together for a little while, enough so that when when Vincent flew back in from Amsterdam, I think maybe Jules might have picked him up from the airport or like that, because he's asking about his trip. So I think they knew each other before. I think they worked together for a little bit, and then Vincent went off to Amsterdam.
Yeah,
and then they've come back and they're reunited.
Yeah, and they do. He does say, he says something like, "Yeah, you'd love it the most." So he knows him.
I think they know, but not too well, because when the wolf drops them off is it Monster Joe's Truck and Tow? Right.
They live in different...
And yeah, they live in different areas. And Raquel. He says, do you want to get... I feel like some breakfast. Do you want to have breakfast with me? The fact that he asks him, like, do you want to have breakfast? I think is more of a... Like, they're not that close. Because you would just assume. He'd say, let's go get breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a nice... I think it's kind of a nice friendship that they form in this.
Yeah, it's really good.
Professional. But they've both been through a little bit as well. They've just done a normal job.
Yeah,
but then stuff went wrong. They learned a bit about each other.
I love the bickering, the bickering that
I'm not sure.
So funny. Like when they're in Jimmy's bathroom and they're washing up, and Jules like washes his hands, and Vincent does his and picks up the towel and he's trying to just blood all over the towel. It's like, oh man, what is? What is this? It's like, what? You watched me wash them. I watched you get them wet.
That's how I speak to my kids.
I used the same soap you did. When I finished, my towel didn't look like no goddamn maxi pad.
I watched you get them wet. I did brush my teeth. Yeah, I watched you. Yeah. I watched you holding a toothbrush.
Yeah. I saw the toothbrush in your mouth. That doesn't mean you brushed your teeth.
My kids have learned the trick. They go, yeah, I have. Look.
They're just eating toothpaste.
They just eat it, but they think that they don't eat it. They just kind of rub it. Sometimes they're good kids. They brush their teeth, but they do the mistake of going, watch, and they're getting the air from their lungs. Like that's not good smell. Sorry, darling.
No thanks.
It didn't work for you. I love their little bickering, which is why I wasn't sure. You know, when they fight like that, I'm like, they kind of know each other at some level. Anyway, I do like it. They work really well together.
Yeah. Yeah,
same page.
Their little conversation in the diner towards the end, where he's so shocked, Vincent's so shocked. It's like you're really considering leaving the life. Why were you sitting here eating the muffin, and then you're like, I'm out. He's like, yeah, I was sitting here eating my muffin, and I'm gonna go and tell Marcellus this afternoon.
Yeah, wow. What are you gonna do? Walk the earth?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That discussion is just. Is so good. So you decided to be a bum without legal tender. you're a bum.
Well, it leads into.
If my answers scare you, Vincent, you should cease asking scary questions. I frighten you, Vincent.
So good. What do you say? I want to go meet interesting people, have some adventures.
Get in adventures. Yeah.
Like Kung Fu.
Yes.
He's so cool.
He mentions that character. I don't remember what reference. What
it's his name, Kane.
Kane.
That's Kung David Fu. Carradine's character in Kung Fu.
Oh, really?
That is his surname. Is Kane.
That's cool.
Yes, very cool.
I didn't know that.
Lee didn't know that. I knew that. Boom! Episode finish. Mic drop.
Point for Terrence. Another character that we should talk about. Very short, short amount of screen time, but the wolf.
Oh yeah.
Harvey Keitel is so good in this. I prefer this performance than I do the performance in Reservoir Dogs.
And absolutely.
I love Reservoir Dogs, but he is just, with the short amount of screen time that he has, is incredible. And yeah, like we said, like oozes cool and just confident, quiet, in control, is stern when he has to be. But other than that, he's the most courteous, friendly. But you see the cogs constantly churning. Like, he gets the information and then he has a plan. It's instantaneous. Yeah. That's why he's there. He's a problem solver.
So
he talks fast. He thinks fast. You got to keep up.
And again, in the scene where he's taking the notes, what's the wife's name? Bonnie. When's she due home? Where is it? Half an hour away. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Like, he understands that, like, time is a factor. Time is of the essence. So when he's upstairs talking to Jimmy in the bedroom and Jimmy's trying to have this like awkward conversation of like, oh, like these are our best linens. Like, this was, these were given to us by our uncle Conrad and Aunt Ginny, and they're not with us anymore. And like,
well, your uncle,
the wolf knows he has to jump in. Yeah. He's still in a polite manner. He lights a cigarette and he's like, let me ask you a question. If that's okay. He's like, yeah, of course. And then like, and then proceeds to be like, were they millionaires? Well, your uncle Marcellus Wallace is, but like he jumps in because he knows he has to. But then he's also very polite by being like, oh, if that's okay. Like, he has a choice. He doesn't have a choice.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's amazing. And has fun with what he does as well. Like, when they're getting hosed down and he's laughing. What do they look like, Jimmy? Oh, they look like dogs.
Oh, man. That's so cool. I like that when he's handing out the money. You like oak?
Oh, yeah.
I like oak.
Oh, yeah. Oak's nice.
And then before we go away from this scene, when Jules makes a big deal about... Well, makes a big deal. Tries to do small talk with Jimmy about the coffee. Some gourmet shit.
Yeah.
And then Quentin's beautiful...
You don't need to talk to me about my coffee.
Reprise against that, yeah.
I know it's good.
Not reprise.
Because I buy the good stuff. Yeah, it's amazing. And like the little nod as well when...
That's
when
I want Winston, to get to. Yes.
Yeah, when the wolf comes in and they get the coffee. It's like, oh, they're in the car. They're looking at the car. And it's like, hey, Jimmy, can you... I smell some coffee brewing. Do you mind making me a cup? Lots of cream, lots of sugar. And then he goes in and just takes a sip and turns around with a knowing around. Little, this is really good.
I love that.
And it's so good.
I couldn't remember it happening when I rewatched it just recently. And watching it, you know, you have those moments of, he turns around and says how nice it is. And then he did it.
Yeah, it's so sweet. It's such a beautiful moment. I love it. It's hilarious.
There's another nod to something as well later on that I wrote in the notes. I'll see. I've got so many notes. I haven't looked than once, and I haven't read anything. I looked to see, oh, is anything going to jump out at me? No, because the text is tiny. We're talking. All right. It's good. It's good. Maybe I should look at something.
Let's talk about Mia, because
yes,
I'd love to talk about Mia. Yeah, her character is so interesting. Like, the wife of a gangster.
Mm.
I think my favorite chapter is the Vincent takes Mia out on a date. It's not a date. Definitely not a date.
She is so painfully flirting with him.
Yeah.
Like, painful.
Just like having the most fun. But I think they genuinely have chemistry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's electric and between Vincent those is two like, characters. He's like, I've got to play it cool. You're professional. My favorite scene, I think, in the entire film, and I'd have to think about it because there's so many, and we'll get to it one about when, but is when he's in the bathroom at a house where they get back. They've done the dance contest. They've been out. They've had a great time. They've got the trophy with them.
They've busted back into their house. They're dancing.
Dancing, putting on some music. I'm going to go take a piss. Too much information, Vincent, but you go right ahead. And then he's in there and he's just talking to himself in the mirror. Like, this is a question of loyalty. This is a test. And he like talks himself out of like, it's like, drink your drink, but do it quickly. You're just going to go home and that's all you're going to do. And then he comes out of the bathroom and she's like OD'd on the floor. And like, then it all kicks off.
And he's come out going, yeah, I got to go.
Yeah, like, hey, Mia, look, thanks. Totally thanks for the night. It was fun. And she's just like, oh, seeing the grossness coming out of her. I really like the fact that Tarantino doesn't shy away from showing you the horrors of it. Because we've seen the euphoria of it all when Vincent's driving and it's like, oh wow, that's cool. No, it is not cool. Like, this stuff is bad. And he's happy to show it to you.
And you actually mentioned in the Reservoir Dogs episode that, you know, there's a lot of talk about a lot of talk about Quentin and his violence and his use of it, but all the violence has consequence.
Yeah, it's for a point. It's for a purpose. It's not just there for the sake of being there.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Kill Bill next week, which we'll get into that conversation because that is stylized.
Yes, which we all know, and we will address that then. But the, you know, leading into this scene where she ODs, you know, that's why it's important that we know that he went into this guy's house,
yep,
and he shot connects. Up and he's got it all in his pocket, oh, and all
the
that.
The lighting is so good.
Just when you see her, you reach into his coat pockets
and then pull out,
and
the
she finds out a little
she
bag.
She thinks
here,
it's cocaine.
You just, oh man, you're just like, no, 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 no.
You're like, stop. Like, I didn't, God. When I first saw it, I didn't know what was happening, but like now, like knowing what she thinks it is, and oh,
and it's said very briefly, but the what's the actor's name, the dealer,
the character or the actor?
The actor.
I don't know the actor's name. I'm sorry. It was supposed to be Kurt Cobain.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and the girlfriend was supposed to be who was her?
Courtney Love.
Courtney Love. Yeah. And yeah, that's who the characters were based on.
Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
Patricia? Rosanna.
Rosanna.
Rosanna Arquette. He actually
his
says...
Lance. Let's just say Lance.
Lance says, oh, look, I don't have any other...
Yeah.
I've just got some baggies.
Is the baggie,
right?
Is the baggie okay?
Yeah.
Can you get me some baggies?
Which helps with identifying, the yep. misidentifying.
Yep. It all works. Everything connects so well. But yeah, Mia is just such an amazing character and playful and fun, and the first
time we are seen that Tarantino allows himself to explore his foot fetish.
Yes.
Is with Mia.
Get introduced to her. We see her lips when she's talking to the microphone. Make yourself a drink and I'll be down in two shakes of a lamb's tail.
Vincent.
Yeah, the intercom. We've got that as a what about when from Tobias. Spoilers for that.
I love how she keeps playing with him because he's just answering.
Yeah.
And
so
she,
hello.
And she answers.
Push the button.
You Hello. Don't need to. You can hear. Oh,
just... And she also had nothing else to say to him other than pour yourself a drink. Like, she could have just said that and not made him go to the intercom.
Exactly.
Just play, just messing with
exactly.
him.
Yeah. And he says, where is it?
Cat with a mouse.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love a lot. I realized I say I love that a lot in a lot
oh,
of
really?
Episodes. Yeah, I love
Well, that's because we're here to celebrate movies, so we're talking about great cinema.
I've been a lot
I
of
can't wait
saying words.
Until too. We put a film on the calendar that is like... one of your all-time favorite films that you know better than I do. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome, awesome. Oh, Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz, correct.
I had to look because the name left
me. Bugging you?
Eric Stoltz, yeah.
Well,
any other characters?
Because, I mean...
They're the three main ones.
Butch. I love Butch's
Marcellus.
Character. I haven't... Yeah, okay, very quickly on Butch. Because I want to shout out Bruce Willis in this film. Mm. He is kind of known... at the time of recording this, at least, as being like a phone-it-in kind of actor. Like, he kind of just gets a paycheck, and in fact, where there's scenes where he's not actively in, but other characters are talking to him, like, it's reported that he doesn't even go there, they just get a stand, like a stand-in double. To like, he's just like, yeah, I'll come in for a couple of days and do a script and pay me this many millions of dollars.
Oh, okay.
And doesn't give very good performances. And you can kind of see it in his films, which is such a shame because he's a brilliant actor, or at least he was. And this film highlights it incredibly well. Like, Tarantino gets a performance out of him. This is his best performance in anything that I've ever seen him do, including Die Hard, for me.
Wow. I'm trying to think other things I've seen him in. I'm drawing a blank, sorry.
Whole Nine Yards. No, I could list off a few.
Hudson Hawk.
Look who's talking.
Hudson Hawk. I'd rather go Hudson. You probably haven't seen that.
I haven't seen Hudson Hawk.
That was an 80s film. That's a heist film. It's fun. It's a comedy. But lots of action.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Watch it. We'll see if we put it
on. But yeah, I think his performance is so good. And I love his character. Just... the way that he's introduced as this boxer who's a little bit out of his prime. He's going to take a fall, try and get some money, and yet turns against the mobster and has to. He's going to live a life on the run now. Like, he's obviously in a dire situation. He needs to get out of this life.
Mm-hmm.
Finds an opportunity, seizes it, is a loving partner to his girlfriend, Fabian, so much so that when he's getting like massively flirted with in the cab with Esmeralda Villalobos.
Mm-hmm. Who is another character from another?
Yeah, she thing that Tarantino she played a cleaning loved. Lady in a TV show or a film.
I think it was a short film.
And where she cleans up crime scenes, which is why she's so obsessed with murder.
She's obsessed with murder and death.
Yeah.
His character is one of a few that have this switch. You know, you said he's an extremely caring and loving.
He's also
partner.
An asshole.
Yes. He has a switch, right? So he's also willing to kill someone. Well, he didn't know that he killed someone, but he is extremely violent. Capable of it.
He's strong,
which is what you need to see what happens later on. You need him.
Like
to
he didn't realize that he killed Floyd.
That's right. Yeah, but he's totally different to Fabian. And he's so loving and patient with her. And
he can be impatient. And
yeah.
Yes, there are some not so good character traits there. But that's like that's human beings.
That's what
like,
I mean. Yeah.
They're flawed, right?
Yeah.
And I love the bit when he gets back. On the chopper to her, and he's trying to rush her, and she comes downstairs. And she's like, "Get on!" And she just
starts crying,
and he immediately is just like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, honey." Yeah. And like, doesn't run. He's like, "Tell me about your breakfast. Did you get the blueberry pancakes? No, they only had buttermilk. Like, what happened? Are you sure you're okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I think I broke my nose. It's gonna be fine. Since I left you, it's been the weirdest day. Get on, I'll tell you all about it."
Well, and the flipping that I'm mentioning is with Pumpkin and Honey Bunny. You know, they're talking in the diner, blah, 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 and then they just turn into these maniacal criminals. Get out!
Like,
that was good. Anyway.
Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
Any of you, f***ing prick, move, and I'll let you get every f***ing last one of you. Yeah. And then it goes into the music.
So good.
Soundtrack in my head.
It sounded like you were going into the Seinfeld.
My voice is totally, I don't know, I've been talking all day.
Right. Well,
and talking all night.
I think it's going to be worth jumping into What About When, because this is probably going to be a bigger one.
Should we do that or Marcellus's Case?
We'll do that at the end. All right.
Now, have we done all the things we said? We haven't touched on everything. There's no way we could talk about everything in this
film.
We
can't. Leave a comment down below if you're on YouTube, or send us a tweet, or hit us up on Instagram.
Or go watch one of the other thousands of videos on YouTube that will go into full detail and breakdown of all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And then come back to our...
We're just here to have fun.
Yeah.
And add the film to the movie calendar, which we're going to do after we do our hashtag What About Whens.
Yes.
So here we are in What About When. We're going to get straight into it because this is going to be a big, big section. I've got a wonderful email here from a regular listener, Tobias. Thank you again so much for this. So Pulp Fiction, episode 27.
Yep.
27.
I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because Kill Bill 29 and then 30 will be the first one.
Write it somewhere on my phone, shouldn't I?
I used to write it when I had paper. And I would write it at the top of the paper, but I've completely forgotten. I'll go through this. The email is really quite long, and he's even included a picture. Because he talks about a popular meme that came up of Vincent where he's walking around Mia's apartment and he can't find the intercom. It's so wonderful.
This is a great way to get in touch with us. If you do want to explain a little bit about what your thoughts are, definitely in the email. That's perfect.
Yeah, amazing. We love getting those. We've had quite a few in there. They're all been amazing. Send us an email. We are at the movie Cal on Twitter and Instagram, or the movie cal@gmail.com is the email. I did it the wrong way around.
And we have a contact page on the movie calendar website as well, moviecalendar.com. So long email. We're not going to read out the whole email, but taking a few of the points for What About Whens.
Yep.
We'll take Tobias's first because a lot of them cross over with ours as well.
Yeah, I'll read the first part of the email is really sweet. It was, "Hey guys, I really enjoyed the last episode on Reservoir Dogs." Finger up for the card, Terrence. Perfect. I keep going wrong hand, but it's points. It's fine. Recently rewatched the film twice, and it still blows me away how brilliant it is. I'm a huge Quentin Tarantino fan, and Pulp Fiction is without question my favorite Tarantino film.
I completely
understand that. It's on the top of so many people's, not only just Tarantino films, but just films in general.
Oh, yeah.
Like, completely understand that. For me, not my favorite Tarantino film. We will get that to that one eventually on the calendar, I'm sure. And I'll talk about that. Email goes on. A few really nice comments saying how amazing and handsome we are. No, he doesn't. He doesn't say that. I added creative.
I'm pretty sure he does.
Creative license there. Here are my hashtag what about when moments for Pulp Fiction. So, the opening conversation between Honey Bunny and Pumpkin.
Mm.
Again, Quentin Tarantino is just an absolute master when it comes to dialogue and watching these two characters discuss their previous crimes. It's just, it's amazing. And you have to agree.
I love Tim Roth in the diner again.
It's so good.
So good. And he's speaking with his, is that his native accent?
His natural accent.
Yep. I love that. That's one of mine as well.
I love that he had like Tim Roth in his first film play a cop. And then in his second film, play a criminal. I think that's so clever and so funny. And yeah, I love the dynamic between those two. And also, what a way to open a film, right? Just two characters talking about stuff. And then they're, I don't want to rob liquor stores anymore. I don't want, like, you get your head blown off sticking up a gas station. Banks are insured. And yeah, they talk about doing the diner. And they're like, let's go right now and bang straight into it. Like, so what good. An opening shot.
So good. She's just a psycho.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll do whatever you say, lady. Honey Bunny, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's her, like, persona. I think she's probably a more sweet person. But yeah, when she goes into, I'm going to rob this place mode, terrifying. Yeah. So thank you for that. That's an amazing hashtag. What about when? Yes. No, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to the briefcase in a second.
Okay.
Yeah. Hashtag, what about when Marcellus Wallace propositions Butch to throw the fight? It is such smooth dialogue mixed with an awesome, cool soundtrack.
Oh, so good. Is that the Al Green song in the background?
I'm not too sure.
Let's Stay Together?
Not too sure.
I think it is.
But yeah, that there's actually an homage in episode one of this podcast for Parasite. There is an homage to that scene.
In our
episode.
When we did Talking?
Yep. And you don't even... You'll notice talking. It. You'll notice when we did Talking. You'll notice it from the very first frame of us being on thing. On screen, you should see it. So yeah, jump on YouTube, go to our Parasite episode, and
has it got to do with this?
And you'll see it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Should I do this? I'll put my finger up to point to a card, an interactive
ding,
card.
There it is. Yeah, you'll be able to see it straight away. I had a friend of mine message me and be like, "Was that for Pulp Fiction?"
Yeah, of course it was.
And I was like,
"Yeah,
inadvertently, yes,
absolutely." We plan. So we know we drop.
But no, that is such a cool scene. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit before and. In the episode of just the close-up on Butch as he's being told
you don't see Marcellus.
To throw the fight. And yeah, you don't see Marcellus. You just see like the back of his head.
Yeah. And then the crossover as well where Vincent... That's later, isn't it?
With what?
Where Vincent and Jules come in. That's after already, isn't it?
No. So they come in.
And he goes to the bar and gets some red apple cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then they look at each other.
Yeah, Butch comes up and... And fun fact, while we're here, fun fact about that, it has been confirmed that the person who keyed Vincent's car, you know, he's like, I had it in storage, I had it out for like 3 days and it got keyed. It was Butch. And he did it after he left.
Oh.
That, yeah, because they had that little confrontation. I'm not your friend.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
How did he know it was his car?
Probably just guessed. Butch kind of flies on instinct.
Some gangster car.
He probably just keyed every car that was parked.
Well, hang on, they were in... They were
at
in
some
there.
Point in time, Butch... It was Butch that keyed...
Yeah, no, that's
it was
good.
Butch that keyed his car. Whether it happened then or not, I don't know.
We've only done two What About Whens.
Hashtag What About When Mia watches Vincent on the security feed and then speaks to him through the intercom. Vincent looks confused, which has become a very popular meme, which I'm sure Terrence has just put
I'm gonna put it up.
As he's looking between the two of us.
Oh, it's so cool.
It's hilarious. I love that. Hashtag What About When Vincent and Mia enter the dance contest. I love that scene... And that song so much.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really sweet. In fact, we had that as our exit song after our pastor pronounced us husband and wife. We did the whole dance as well.
That's so cool.
That is gorgeous and stunning.
I would have loved to have seen
that. I love that. That's amazing. If you've got a video of that, I have to see it, Tobias. You've got to send it through.
I wonder, were you two both barefooted?
Yeah. He's in socks, I think.
He's in socks.
And she goes barefoot. Classic Tarantino.
Well, Tobias. Challenge laid down. Just have to tell me the answer. That's it.
Now, Terrence, I don't know if you know this or not, but even though they came home with the trophy for the dance contest,
yeah,
did you know that they didn't actually win it?
Yeah, I knew that. I had no idea.
Yeah, so they didn't win and they stole the trophy. Which I just love that so much.
How do you know that?
It's just a thing. It's just a piece of trivia that most people know.
Wow.
And look, if it's not true, I love it. So it's my headcanon.
That's cool.
Yeah, I love the fact that they didn't win and they just, yeah. stole the trophy and ran, which is like as to the whole joy of the evening for them. They had some drinks and were like, let's just get it.
Oh man, those two should have hooked up.
Yeah, well, so I think Vincent would have been cut in half by Marcellus if that had happened.
Yeah, probably.
We've got a bunch more here from Tobias. Hashtag what about when Mia overdoses and Vincent takes her to the drug dealer's place to get a shot of adrenaline in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might... we might keep going. We'll see how we go.
We'll just quick fire a couple.
Yeah, we'll quick fire a couple, but I have a story about this scene.
Oh, usually it's me. All right,
this is my cinema. It'll be a good story. Cinema story for this one, which I haven't actually told Terrence. No. I alluded to it beforehand. I was like, I have a story to tell in the cinema. I went and saw this film in a movie theater on the Gold Coast. You look that up if you're not from Australia, where I used to live. They were doing an event over the weekend where they were doing like $10 movie tickets for like cult films as well as the new releases that were coming out. So I saw like, there were some days where I saw like 3 or 4 films in a day just because I had the day off. So why not? Cool. And I went with a few friends to different films. One of my friends, Jay, shout out to you for going along on the ride. And one of our friends that we took to see Pulp Fiction had never seen it before. He was an adult, obviously. We were all young adults. And during that scene where it's all very heightened and Mia gets taken to the drug dealer's house and she's laying on the floor and they're all arguing about where's the medical book and get the shot of adrenaline and we need a magic marker and they're all shouting and it's all happening. And then he gets the shot and they're about to do it and he just a countdown and he goes 3 and lifts it up and it goes silent and it's just a close up and they're all sweating and it's calm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
During that slow, like in between 3 and 2, all I heard was thud. And my friend had passed out in the movie theater. It was just, it got too much.
Oh,
it was God. Too high and he just went bang down on the ground and he just collapsed. So we went over to check to see if he was okay. But like, testament to the realism and just like terrifying nature of that scene. And Tarantino will never watch this in a million years, but if this manages to find your presence at some point, you made a friend of mine pass out in the movie theater during the stabbing in the heart scene for Mia in Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
Incredible. I couldn't believe it. He was fine. Like, he was okay. He came to pretty much straight away. And yeah, and he went out and got some air and then came back. But yeah, just insane.
Did he see him deliver the blow?
Nah, he was on the floor. He was out. He was gone.
That's awesome.
It's incredible. Awesome. Yeah. What filmmaking?
Oh, wow. I remember he's got his hand up. Do they do a close up on the end of the needle?
On the needle.
Adrenaline just
the dripping. Droplet comes out. It was during that the thud on the floor.
Oh man. what an intense scene. Mm. And the comedy, still the comedy in that. Yeah. You know, you just gotta in the heart. So I've got to stab her 3 times.
No, you don't have to stab her 3 times. You have to stab her once, but it's gotta be hard enough to get through the breastplate. You gotta get through that. Yeah. Okay, give it a shot. I'm not giving it a shot, you give it a shot. I never done this before, man. I never done this before either.
So good. Yeah. So good. And the other girl who's just spaced out.
Yeah.
The Irish girl who's just
chilling,
doing something else.
Do you want to hang out?
She's just watching it all.
Oh man,
just watching, just another day.
Yeah, it's insane. What an absolute,
that's a cool
amazing
story.
Scene. If you haven't noticed as well, there's a couple of really cool things in the background of that scene. There's 2 board games that are sitting on a table.
Oh yes,
go.
Is it Game of Life?
Game of Life is one.
Yep. Mm. So I saw them and I was like, oh, I bet you they're for... I can't remember the other one, but I know it was... Yeah, I did see them.
The other one is Operation.
That's right. That's
which right. is so good. Like,
that's right.
Like, yeah, production designer, like, tip the hat because... Yeah,
so good.
Amazing. There's another really good thing like that in Kill Bill, which we'll talk about.
All right, we'll talk about that.
Of a prop in the background. Well, not right. so much in the background, but yeah, we'll talk about it.
All right, we'll talk about that. Does Tobias have any other what about ones?
Oh, so many.
Let's start right, we listing
might smash,
them.
We might smash some out. So hashtag what about when Captain Coons, played by the brilliant
Christopher Walken,
gives young Butch his dad's watch. That story is incredible. I love it. What about when Butch sneaks back to his apartment to collect his grandfather's watch and shoots and kills Vincent?
Oh man, when he finds this cannon with a silencer on it.
Incredible. I think, have you noticed that anytime Vincent goes into a bathroom, something horrible happens in the film. Did you notice that? So he goes into Mia Wallace's bathroom and she ODs. He goes into the bathroom at the diner and it gets robbed. And he goes to the bathroom in his in Butcher's apartment and he gets killed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's all doing a he's doing a number two during every oh, except for the one where he's in Mia's apartment. He's talking himself out of sleeping with her. So he has to go home and maintain loyalty.
Where he's taking too long.
Yeah, he's taking too long in the bathroom.
There's your number two.
But apparently, and I read this, I don't know if the validity of it is true, but apparently one of the side effects from doing heroin is constipation.
Oh, wow. Okay. I did notice when he's on the toilet a couple of times that he's reading the same book.
It's a pulp magazine.
So when he's in the diner?
It's pulp fiction.
I don't really... you know, the definition's there and everything.
Yeah.
Pulp. What do you mean pulp fiction?
A mushy... It's just a magazine.
Okay. It's a graphic novel about a spy. I looked it up.
It might be now, but
I Wikipedia that. No, it was.
What about when Marcellus Wallace crosses the street and spots Butch at a red light? Butch then runs him over and crashes the Honda. Marcellus then tries to shoot and shoots the bystander instead.
I love that he shoots the bystander.
And both get captured and Marcellus is sodomized by a cop.
Little cameo by Kathy Griffith.
As herself, she's credited. Did you see that?
Yes.
Kathy Griffith herself. It's got in the titles. I love it. So weird.
And they're talking about him. Oh, which guy? That guy over there. And he pulls out a gun.
Yeah.
And they all scream and Kathy just goes... walks away.
Oh, what did we drop a phone?
That was my phone.
That's okay. And then Butch saves Marcellus. We should talk about the getting the weapon. Choosing the weapon.
Didn't we talk about that already?
No, I said we do it. What about...
Oh, okay. All right, do it. Let's talk about it. He changes his mind. He decides to go back in.
Yeah, but so not empty-handed. He's like out the door. He's half out the door. And you can see it in, again, the amazing performance by Bruce Willis on his face, the conflict. And he's like, nah, I've got to do something. Before I go down, I've got to get a weapon. Picks up...
A hammer first.
And he's like, yep, cool. I can... Turns it around. So it's got the fork bit on it. It's like, oh, no, hang on. Puts that down. Baseball bat. Yeah. This is it. This is going to do it. Two hands wielding. Yep, cool. Looks around some more. Oh, hang on. Down that goes. Chainsaw.
The chainsaw. That's off the shelf.
Amazing. Yeah, and then just he looks up and they change the lighting so that it looks like he's looking into the eyes of God himself and just doesn't even look where he puts it. Just sort of throws the chainsaw down. And he's like, what is he looking at? What is he going to get? Is it a lightsaber? Like, what is happening? And then, yeah, gets the samurai sword, the katana off the wall. And yeah, it's so badass. I love it.
Yeah, that's good. And he's like, yeah, I'm ready now. That's it. Yeah. I'm going down.
Goes down and slashes him up.
That is one of my what about wins. Goes and I list all the weapons here. Do we have any more from Tobias?
There's a couple more. What about when the guy bursts out of the bathroom to shoot Vincent and Jules and completely misses and Jules thinks that it's divine intervention from God and decides to retire?
That's pretty much wrapped up the whole movie.
That's wrapped up and summarised the entire film for Jules' arc, at least, anyway.
Yeah. So, really cool. I love it. And I love how they both look at it. He's a miracle. He's like, yeah, it's just a freak accident.
Yeah.
Another Arquette sibling.
Yes.
Is the fourth person in the room with that hand cannon.
Yes. Rest in peace.
Yep.
What about when... We've got two more. What about when... I can't believe I didn't talk about this. What about when Vincent shoots Marvin in the face by accident in the back of the car? It's so good. The lead up to it is amazing.
It totally catches everyone,
right? Marvin, what do you think about it? It's like, man, I don't even have an opinion. You gotta have an opinion, man. Just, oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
I think that is one of those real, like, what moments. Like, really? That... No one saw that coming. No one.
Not even a little bit.
No one.
It was changed from the original script. It was supposed to be that Vincent shot him in the neck.
Yeah.
And he died more of like a...
Blood loss.
Like a long, like a gurgling kind of horrible. And it was either Vincent's idea, John Travolta. Or Phil Lamar, who plays Marvin. It was one of the two ideas. Phil Lamar says that it wasn't. But it wasn't his idea.
Yeah.
But John Travolta says that he got the idea from him. So it's, okay. And again, it was a long time ago, so they just probably don't remember. But yeah, just the comedic value of just having his head explode in the back of the car.
And the inside of the window with the curtain of red. I got the image of one of those confetti bombs going off in an enclosed room, and you're outside and you just see a couple of little dribbles of confetti out the bottom of the door. We're talking about the most horrific thing that could ever happen.
But it's just, it's too good. Last one, what about when the wolf shows up to solve the problem of dead Marvin? Also love Mr. White. I mean, Winston the Wolf, aka the Wolf's response when Vincent asks him to say please. And gives them the orders.
If I'm
Kurt with you, it's because time is of a factor.
Oh,
so
man.
Amazing.
What's up Winston's butt to, not Winston, what's up Vincent's butt to all of a sudden start just, going, hey, be nice to me.
It's just part of his character. He doesn't like people barking orders at me. That's all.
In the in that same chapter, what about when we see Marvin's body in the trunk or boot of the car, and we only know that it's Marvin's body because we see his beautiful face that identifies his body, the one that just got
even though there would be no face left over after that.
That was funny. Wait, what? Yeah, amazing. That was funny. Look, I've only got a couple of what about whens. I'm gonna list them. Here we go. What about when Vincent Vega comes out of the toilet and Butch blows him away? Oh, I said that one. What about when we realize that the diner Jules and Vincent are in is the same one as Pumpkin and Honey Bunny?
Yeah, amazing. Blew my mind.
Man. Yeah, and then the other ones are the same as what to buy.
I've got one that hasn't been mentioned, and it was at the very top of the episode over the flicker of our opening, and it's, what about when Jules gives the Ezekiel 25:17 speech right before they blow away Brett in the apartment? That whole scene of them entering that room, taking command of the space, eating the burger, drinking the Sprite, finding the briefcase, killing the guy on the couch. Like, it's just a symphony. That whole scene is so perfectly paced and balanced and shot and acted. Everything is on point in that scene, and you learn everything you need to know about those two people.
It's so different to other scenes in other films where you know things like that happen when the heavies come in to lay the law down for those that have done wrong by the mafia or by the whatever the criminal overlord. This just played out so differently and so much more entertaining and so much more surprising.
Yeah.
Because it catches you off guard the way, he doesn't look, boom, gone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
Oh, man.
You were saying something about best intentions?
Oh, my God. And drinking
you were finished.
Drinking his Sprite?
Yeah, all the way
just
to
the
end.
Shot of here, of his, that angle, that shot, that just, I don't know. So
it's
rude.
Incredible.
So
Samuel
rude.
L. Jackson haven't praised the actors nearly enough. Everyone is just pitch perfect in this film. Sam Jackson, John Travolta. Bruce Willis, everyone. Uma Thurman.
Oh yeah, I think this put Uma Thurman on my radar. I don't think I knew of Uma Thurman before this, but Travolta, this was already when Travolta was on his down slump.
He was, yeah. This was kind of the resurrection of John Travolta.
Yeah. What horrible hair. But yeah. I don't know where Bruce Willis was.
It was supposed to be Michael Madsen.
Oh, cool.
The actor was supposed to be. Supposed
Black
to
ties,
be
suits.
Well, he was because he's the brother of Vic Vega. And so he was just going to get the actor to play the same, like the brothers.
They're
the same.
Brothers.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought I was all cool and smart realizing, he's a Vega.
No, they are brothers. In fact, Tarantino was going to write a film about the two of them called the Vega brothers or the Vega something or other.
How did they get to work? On the Vega bus. The Vega bus.
Gross. Bye, everyone. Thanks for coming.
I know what the soundtrack's going to be like for that film. Tarantino, I'll sort your music for that one.
Sorry, I'm totally they friendly. Aged. They aged up out of it, so he couldn't end up doing it. Yeah. But what a cool idea that was.
Very cool idea. Should we talk about the briefcase?
We're going to do the briefcase.
Let's talk about the briefcase.
So we're going to talk about theories as to what Terrence and I think is happening with the MacGuffin in this film, which is Marcellus Wallace's briefcase. Terrence,
all right.
What do you think is in the briefcase?
A little bit on the spot. But we have spoken about it before, so I'm trying to go back in my head to what I said to you once before.
Or just what do you think now after just watching it recently?
I kind of... Okay,
do you have any like theories. You can say literally anything. It's your opinion. What, yeah, in your opinion, what is it?
First of all, I think what's in the briefcase to the viewer of this film, it doesn't matter what's
in it. It's different. It's different for everybody.
I think it doesn't matter what's in it. What matters is that what is in it is super important to Marcellus. That's it. And everyone that sees it understands its weight. That's it. I actually don't even think about it because I know it will hurt me too much. It's something glorious. It has this glow. It may be physical. It may be metaphysical. It doesn't matter what it is. That's my belief of it, that it doesn't matter what it is. It's just enough for people to die over many times.
Does it hurt sitting on that fence?
That's so not a fence.
So you're not definitively... You have nothing in your mind as to what it might be.
No, that is what it is. That it's not important what it is.
Okay.
That's my decision. That it doesn't matter what it is. You just need to know that it's super important. That's it.
Cool.
And maybe can't be shown. Just the glow of it can be seen.
I'll cut all that out because that was all boring and I'll just do mine then.
Oh, man.
Me, I think it is a light bulb.
You're an idiot.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I had to do it. It was right there. I had to pick it. So there are many theories about this film, whether it's drugs or whether it's just cash or whether it's the diamonds from Reservoir Dogs.
Ooh,
or whether
I like
it's
that one.
Marcellus Wallace's soul is a prevailing theory, one that I happen to subscribe to.
Yes.
Because we look at the back of the head and he's got the Band-Aid.
We all know that's how you extract a soul.
Like, he could have had his soul extracted that way. The combination to the briefcase is 666, as well as it has this glow that whenever anybody looks at it, they just like... overwhelmed that they can't even speak.
Yep.
For me, as cliched as the answer is, I love the idea that it's Marcellus Wallace's soul. And another thing that makes me think that is that because he gets it back right before Butch throws the fight.
Yeah.
So if this theory is correct, he doesn't have a soul up until that point. He gets it back. He has his soul back so that when he and Butch go through that experience together, he can let him go.
Okay.
Because he has a soul again.
He has a soul. And he's helping other people. Like, he bought donuts for someone.
Yeah.
And he was walking across the road to give them donuts.
Yeah, to Vincent.
To Vincent?
Well, yeah, so...
Oh, that's before he has his meeting.
So it was... No. Oh, no, yeah, you haven't pieced this together
I haven't pieced it together.
So in Butch's apartment... Vincent wasn't there by himself. He was there with Marcellus because Jules had left to wander the earth. He's retired now. So Marcellus has to be his partner. So those two were at the apartment together. And so he was going out to get breakfast for the two of them, which is why he was so close by. People were like, why makes Marcellus no sense. There? Why was he walking around the street so close to the...
He was
staking out the house. He just went out to get some pastries. That's why he was literally around the corner.
Well, he had a soul to do that. He's like, I'll do that.
Yeah. But yeah, because Jules is gone now. Jules is wandering the earth. He's retired because it's a non-linear
I've stopped trying to put the pieces together.
Well, that hopefully helps.
I just enjoy it for what it is. And this is what I was going to say earlier when I said I was going to say something that included my wife. It was about how we know... I did end up saying something about my wife anyway, but how we know that we've just watched a great film. It's when we're talking about it for days and weeks after and years after. And this is one of those films.
Yeah,
because I'm still absolutely not...
Absolutely is.
I still would have to sit with Lee after this episode and him draw out on cards...
I could do it.
...the different chapters and put it... And many people out there would be able to do it. Lee, don't think you're that special. Many would... did you hear that? Sorry. Many would be able to, but I've actually got satisfaction in enjoying it for what it is and knowing that I can piece a couple of them together.
Yeah.
And knowing that I didn't have to put something in that case to really enjoy the film.
It's part of the fun, right? It's all part of the experience. It's all part of the fun. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And if you want to enjoy this film every single year, we are going to give you a date to do that now. We're going to add Pulp Fiction to the movie calendar. Did you like that?
I did.
That was pretty smooth.
That was good.
So the date that we have chosen for this film, we had no contributions as to when it was going to be. If you want to contribute to when films should appear on the calendar, please do so. We've had a couple of amazing ones.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in the email that Tobias sent us for the What About Whens for this episode, he mentioned a film that he wants to see on the calendar and a date for it. And I won't say what they are because it will spoil them. But Tobias, yes and yes. So yeah, you know what that means. But the date that we have chosen for Pulp Fiction is May 21st. Here it is on the screen for people watching on YouTube. Just want to make sure that I got the date correct. I think May 21st. I did. That's amazing. I didn't want to pick up my phone during it. May 21st. And the reason is, and it's a very simple one, but I think it is absolutely necessary, is that this is the date that the film premiered at Cannes. The Cannes Film Festival, where it won the Palme d'Or. It was when audiences were first introduced to this absolutely monumental, game-changing piece mm-hmm. of cinema. And so there is no better place in our eyes and minds as to where it should go.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. The next best date would be the date that I first watched this film. And because I can't remember that, I'm happy.
Yeah, I know. I've got a couple of like movie tickets from like films that I saw like years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I'll pull them out every now and then. Yeah, like I did not? With The Farewell when my friend Jenny and I, because Terrence was preoccupied, Jenny and I reviewed The Farewell and we put the film on the date that we went to the cinema together to see it.
Yeah, very cool. Because
I still had the ticket, which was super cool.
That's very cool. That's how you can play a part in this. If you're watching this, you know, if it means something to you, and it could be something as simple as that. If it's a life-changing movie, it's your favorite film, let us know if we can do it. And we've got nothing better and we think that's a great reason.
Yeah.
We'll do it. Back it up with a story. Back it up with a reason that we should make it on that day. Let
us know. So we're going to be talking about next week. Next week's episode is going to be Kill Bill Volume 1. And then the week after that will be Kill Bill Volume 2. We decided that they both need their own special episode because they're both amazing. So we're going to be talking all about those. So make sure you get in your hashtag What About Whens for those, as well as your date for the calendar. Bit of a peek behind the curtain. We're actually going to be, due to time restraints, we're going to be recording Kill Bill Volume 1 directly after this episode.
Why did you do that?
Because it's going to help people. I don't want to mislead people. So make sure you get in for Volume 2. We're not going to be recording for a while. So Kill Bill Volume 2, please get in. Your hashtag What About Whens, so that we can add them to the episode.
We'll try and notify you when we're doing things like this. So we're doing them all together.
The absolute best way to know when and what we're recording is follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Mm-hmm. They are literally the best ways. Instagram, even better, because then you get nice, pretty pictures.
Yeah, and they're not of me. It's all right.
No.
Usually of the film. Sorry.
Yeah, of course.
There was so much that I'm looking through. There are so many notes that I've got that I think are so relevant to talk about. But look, we won't talk about everything. There's so much more that links to every Tarantino film. So many nice little Easter eggs. I don't even want to go there because
very quickly before we end the show, I want to quickly say I know that we finished the episode already, but I really like that Tarantino subverts his own expectations from Reservoir Dogs and has a Mexican standoff at the end of this film that everyone survives.
He has a Mexican standoff that everyone survives.
Yeah, there's guns pointed everywhere, just like they are in Reservoir Dogs. But instead of literally everybody dying, everybody walks away. And aww. I love that expectation subversion because people would have been expecting that when they went and saw this film. So good job, Tarantino.
Well done.
You nailed it. This kid's got a bright future. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you, Terrence. That was a lot of fun.
Yep.
And we'll see you next week for Kill Bill Volume 1.
Beautiful. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. See ya.
Bye.